Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Hump Day edition of The Yard. Hope that you are well, wherever you are today. Whatever's going on in your life, I hope nobody's eating your lunch. You know, life is tough, right? But the reality of it is life's beautiful. It is. Got a lot to talk about today. A lot of baseball stuff, for sure. And, you know, today is the traditional national signing day. Mississippi State not expected to sign anybody to a scholarship. But in the process, you know, of adding a player or two, you know, you'll have, some preferred walk-ons, I guess, that'll have a signing day ceremony. But, it's a different dynamic these days. But I remember, I kind of wrote about this this morning. You know, National Signing Day used to essentially be a national holiday. You know, I don't know if you guys recall, you know, down at LSU, they do what's called the Bayou Bash. And they would get together and basically drink all day and, run out some country club. And then people would sit around as the signees came in and they would celebrate those. And then later in the evening, you know, the head coach would come and address the drunken masses. But, it's a different dynamic. Maybe they do that in December. I don't know. But it was always a big deal to go to what the Cajun folks called, the bash, So it's changed the dynamic a lot. I tell you guys, and if you listen to the show for a while, I was not in favor of the December signing period. And, there's a couple reasons why. Number one, the pressure to sign early is tremendous. You know, that's the expectation. If you commit, you're expected to sign in December. And if you elect to forego signing more times than not, you'll lose your scholarship spot. I mean, it's a pretty rare thing to see a guy commit for a long time. Fabian Lovett's the last guy that I remembered. He was committed to state, elected not to sign in December, and ultimately signed in February. Maybe Nathan Pickering did that too. But it's a rarity, right? It is. But also, too, you only eliminate a couple of weeks of recruiting, right? I mean, the in-person visits don't happen anymore. You know, the official visits don't happen in January. I mean, you remember last year in December, you didn't take any OVs unless you took them in season or in the summer. You didn't get the ability to do that. So used to what would happen is once you got through the regular season, like that Sunday after the regular season, coaches would be on the road doing in-person visits, setting up official visits, and then you would start hosting players in December, take the Christmas break, come back, have a couple weekends or 3 weekends in January, and then everybody would sign. And so because so much is dead nowadays, you're not eliminating much. And so, we'll see what happens. I honestly think the way we're doing it is also kind of working in a negative way in concert with the portal, because I think guys are making less informed decisions these days. It just that doesn't happen the way it used to. And so the recruiting calendar continues to evolve. But, usually we would have the National Signing Day extravaganza, with marching bands and dancing girls and all that kind of stuff. But, not expect to sign anybody today. Interesting. There will be a few around the country. But there's not a lot of, not a lot of depth left in a talent pool at this point. I remember what a big deal it was to get guys here for the first session of summer school. Do you remember what a big deal that was? It was huge. And then all of a sudden you began to get the early enrollments, and then guys would graduate high school early and enroll And I remember the first few times it happened, that people were just like, it's groundbreaking. Well, now it's almost an expectation. I mean, it truly is. It's a rarity these days to see a highly recruited guy be a spring graduate. There's still some of that, but it's not nearly what it used to be. Nowadays, everybody wants to graduate in December, enroll for spring practices, go ahead and get your college career started academically. And I think that's a good thing in and of itself, to be able to graduate early and then enroll in spring practice early on and then have the ability to kind of slow down, I guess, the academic calendar. You know, you kind of come in, take some basic courses and things like that. So you're acclimating to college life, and you've got a little more time to kind of spread the academic workload out. I think that makes sense because not everybody's going pro, contrary to what everybody believes is a high school junior. But that's something I think is a good thing. But and not to mention, too, I mean, hey, you get on a college campus, and one of the most impressive and intriguing things about making that transition, you know, as a high school young man to college girls. It's true. I mean, let's say it for what it is, you know, and now all of a sudden these guys have a little more money in their pocket. So maybe that kind of gawky freshman is more likely to get a date because he can take a girl out on a proper experience these days. I mean, it's just true. I'm just telling you, as a guy that was a high school teenage boy and a guy that has coached high school teenage boys and raised two high school teenage boys. Those days when you sit around thinking about playing Call of Duty and you think, hey, you should be doing your online coursework so you can graduate early. And you think, oh, yeah, there's those Chi Omegas out there that I want to get to know. It's a very big motivating factor. It is. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. Yeah, and they have been, and I love them. I've loved them for so long. You know, there's sometimes, you know, you get hot and cold about a restaurant, right? You get in there and you think, well, you know, it's so great, and then maybe the newness wears off and the novelty wears off. But that just hadn't been the case of me and Bulldog Burger Company. They keep me coming back. Number one is the consistency and the quality of the preparation of the food that I'm going to eat. It's the quality of the experience. It doesn't matter if I'm eating there, getting it to go. It's always a great meal. And they always kind of keep things fresh. Like, they're always changing things up. There's always like a new shake of the day or shake of the week. There's new appetizers they introduce from time to time. And so you get the classic favorites of Bulldog Burger Company, but they're always a little something, you know. And the menu is so diverse, too. It's not just burgers, even though Bulldog Burger Company is known for this great restaurant quality hamburger. Sometimes you just feel like a Sloppy Joe slider. I mean, I tell you, when I was a kid, that was such a treat, man. That was such a treat, man, when Mom would make Sloppy Joes. And that's what it takes me back to. The other day, got the spring rolls as our appetizer. We had the Sloppy Joes. I got the onion rings. You know, I don't like uncooked onions, but I love onion rings. Again, I am a riddle wrapped inside of an enigma. But I love the consistency with Bulldog Burger Company. I know what to expect. And, you know, life is so full of difficult choices. When I can remove one, that's a great thing. It's like, hey, let's just go to Bulldog because I know what I'm going to get. I know the quality I'm going to get from Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, this morning, the SEC released their coaches preseason poll and the all-SEC team announced. And, I don't know that there were a lot of surprises here, but I want to go over the list kind of in its totality and kind of give you some thoughts. The first thing that we'll do, because I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, is Hunter Hines was the only Mississippi State player that was selected preseason all-SEC. And you know what? I'm good with that because more times than not, those guys are picked based on kind of their return. They're returning players. They're a known commodity. But real quickly, there's a lot of, it wasn't just a nine-man deal. But Ike Irish from Auburn was one of the catchers. Devin Burks from Kentucky. Jared Jones from LSU. And then Hunter Hines, of course. Cade Curlin from Florida. Gavin Grahovic. And you know what a great freshman season he had. Same thing with Justin LeBron. He ends up tied with Dean Curley from Tennessee. Justin LeBron, of course, from Alabama. They were excited about him last year. They should have been. Jace Laviolette, Texas A&M, easy pick there. Ethan Petrie from South Carolina, easy pick. Former Big 12 player of the year, Max Bellew at Texas, first team All-SEC. He tied with Trey Phelps from Georgia. Utility guy was Hayden Schott from A&M. Ryan Prager, of course, a guy that basically cost us a player last year because he elected not to sign, and so that freed up some money for Dave Mershon to sign. So thanks, Ryan. Gabe Gakel from Arkansas, one of starting pitchers. Liam Dole from Tennessee. Kane Anderson from LSU. Nate Snead from Tennessee. Alton Davis II, of course, makes the move from Alabama to Georgia. Gavin Guidry from LSU. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not a huge Gavin Guidry fan. I think he's good. I don't know that he's first team good. Second team, Rylan Galvin from Texas and Luke Heyman from Florida are your catchers. Cooper McMurray from Auburn. And what a big get that was for Auburn to get him back. And what I understand, too, about Cooper is he's not a guy resting on the money. You know, this is a guy, too, that understands, you know, they got a chance to do some things at Auburn. They're not expected to be a great team this year, but they should be an improved team if they get any pitching whatsoever. Gavin Keelan from Tennessee, Wyatt Hensler from A&M, Daniel Dixon from LSU, Andrew Fisher from Tennessee, Slade Alford from Georgia, a second-team guy, former Diamond Dog. A lot of people expected him to go pro last year. He didn't. Colby Shelton from Florida, shortstop. Outfielders are R.J. Austin of Vanderbilt, Hunter Ensley from Tennessee, Caden Sorrell from Texas A&M. DH is Will Hodo. There was a time last year with some discussion he might get in the portal, and if he did, I would have been interested in him. Your pitchers, Zane Adams from Alabama, Landon, and this is a transfer, Beldeschies from Arkansas, Hunter Elliott from Ole Miss, name from the past, J.D. Thompson from Vanderbilt, Kyson Witherspoon from Oklahoma. He's the only returning weekend guy there for them. Christian Fouch from Arkansas is a reliever. Miller Green from Vandy is a reliever. And then Robert Hogan from Kentucky. So that's your All-SEC teams. And I can't really argue against any of these, really. And, you know, that's the thing. Anybody can make a list. But let's go through our balloting. We're actually going to start at the bottom. Okay, we'll start at the bottom, and there's a reason, and I'll explain that a little bit later in the show, why we're going to start at the bottom here. So Missouri had the fewest number of points, 31 points. So they are 16th out of 16 teams. We kind of broke some things down the other day. I broke down the quality of State's SEC schedule, and I mentioned that. But, you know, we have had some difficult weekends against them. Even though we took 2 out of 3 from them last year, and you remember 21, we lose 2 out of 3 at home. We thought it was going to cost us a top 8 national seed. It didn't. But a lot of people begin to kind of doubt that team. And, of course, we go up there in 22 and get walked off on the game 3. Tough thing. Number 15, Ole Miss. Yeah, Ole Miss with just 60 points, just 1 point out of 14th. But you're talking to some MLB scouting friends. Again, Ole Miss has some pieces back. And maybe that's not a great thing, but at least you've got a nucleus to work with. I think, you know, between Riley Maddox and Hunter Elliott, they'll be able to kind of piece some things together on the weekend. Not sure about their bullpen. But, you know, Ole Miss had to kind of overpay last year. And they're trying to dig themselves out of that same hole that we were in. I just don't think many people, including the league's coaches, have high expectations for Ole Miss baseball. I do think offensively they have a chance to be decent. You know, we'll see. But, you know, Bianco's a guy, too, that always seems to respond when his back's against the wall. So, you know, we'll see. Number 14, South Carolina with 61 points, just one spot ahead of Ole Miss. And they've got one of the best hitters in the country in Ethan Petrie. There's just not a lot around him. And I think that's one of the things when you look at South Carolina, Paul Maneri, you know. Maneri knows how to manage. You guys know this. Did a great job at Notre Dame and certainly a great job at LSU. And towards the end of it, they were fading, you know. But it'll be interesting. And honestly, I don't know how many years Maneri has left. And I don't mean that in a negative way. But I kind of wonder, is this a placeholder type thing? Is Maneri just there for a couple of years until things settle? Yeah, I don't know. 13 is Alabama with 98. And every year, I have somebody in the SEC baseball media say, man, this is the year that Alabama is going to return. Guys, Jim Wells isn't there anymore. right? And I don't think the strength and conditioning regulations of today are going to allow that return. But I think one of the things that hurts Alabama and Auburn, who are actually ranked 12th and 13th, is it's cheaper to go to school at State or Ole Miss than it is Alabama-Auburn. And so even if you're, like if you're, let's say you're in Birmingham and you're the best player in Birmingham and you get offered from State, Ole Miss, Alabama, or Auburn, well, you're going to be able to go to State and Ole Miss and save money. And so that's one of the reasons you see so many players from the great state of Alabama come to Mississippi to play college baseball. And until they correct that, that's going to be an issue. And I know one of the things that hurts Auburn, who's your number 12 team at 100 points, is like the border counties in Georgia used to be considered in-state tuition. It no longer is. And so that was a great thing. Like during Auburn's greater teams, and listen, Butch done a good job there. I know the last couple of years have not been up to expectations, but I begin to think that that's a huge part of your recruiting when those border counties in Georgia used to be considered in-state and they no longer are. And maybe that changes. Number 11 is Oklahoma, 101. And as you see, like there's a little glut right there between really 10 and 13. Not much separates those teams. Oklahoma, a team just, you know, a couple years ago played for a NAFL championship. You know, and of course they win the Big 12 regular season title last year. Man, they lost a ton of players. A ton. I'm glad we get them early, though. I'm really glad we get them early. Looking forward to that trip to Norman. Once I cover there, I will be among the first to have covered a game on every SEC campus since we expanded to 16 teams. I'll surpass Dave Murray unless Dave decides to join me in Norman. Dave's got a little bit of an ego too. I don't know. But I'm pretty pumped about that. So I'll be able to complete my SEC bingo card. Of course, we went to Texas this past year for football. So we'll have the opportunity, of course, to scratch Oklahoma off the list. And I'm excited about that, too. I enjoy going to these baseball facilities because baseball weekends are just so much different than football. I've shared this with you guys before. Like, on football weekends, everything is so frenetic, right? There's so many people, right? The towns are all buzzing with activity. You got to get to the hotel. You got to get your parking pass picked up. And more times than not, it's in different areas. And then you got to drive to somewhere else, and there's always somebody at the gate that doesn't know what's going on. And by the time you get to press row, my anxiety is through the roof. Like, once I can sit down and unpack all my stuff and grab something to eat, then all of a sudden I can relax. And then it's nonstop. And then more times than not, I drive home the night of the game. And so those weekends are fun, but they're not quite like baseball. Baseball is a little more relaxed. I mean, you get up, you drive there, you pick up, you can park, and you pick up your credential right there at the ballpark. You can settle in, watch the ball game. Saturday's not a travel day, so you can sleep in if you want to. Get out and enjoy your city a little bit. It's a little different. So I'm looking forward to going to Norman and knocking that out. Kentucky is number 10 at 102. You know, last year Nick Mangione took Kentucky to the College World Series for the first time ever. They were the last team in the SEC to go. And I think that says a lot about Nick. And I think Nick is, well, I don't know that they're going to build statues of Nick, but Nick Mangione has ushered in the greatest era of baseball in Kentucky history. And I think when you flash back to him, you know, John Cohen won an SEC championship there. You know, it seems like, you know, Nick is kind of built upon that. Of course, they've made some commitments and, but, you know, Kentucky's, as long as Nick is there, they're going to be a gritty, gutty team. They're going to be a team that gets after you. Now, ahead of them, at number 9, are your Diamond Dogs with 112 points. And so it really wasn't close in that respect, but it was close enough. But personally, I would have picked State 7th in the league. I would have picked State 7th. That's my feeling, and I still think we finished the top half of the league, and I think we're in a possibility to host. And over the course of the season, things change, right? Because right now, there's just some unknowns with State, right? I'd love to sit here and tell you, oh, yeah, Mississippi State's going to be number 1. I don't expect that. But if I was picking just based on what I've seen and what I know, I would have State 7. I would have State ahead of both Texas and Vanderbilt, who are 8th and 7th on the list. Texas comes in at 146. And to be honest with you, I think that is maybe out of respect for Schlossnagel. This Texas team lost some pieces, And again, it's a team I'm glad we get early, and a team I'm glad we're getting at home. Because I do think Texas can be an RPI climate for us. You're able to win that series. I do think Texas is going to have some talent. They're going to be good, but they're not going to be this super team that I think a lot of people expected. People thought Schlossnagel was just going to raid A&M, and then all of a sudden you had the best players from Texas and the best players from A&M on the same roster. That didn't happen. But Texas is going to be a good team. You know, and it all boils down, like for everybody else, it's going to boil down to pitching. And they're kind of having to rebuild that infield around the shortstop. So we'll see how things progress there. Vanderbilt at 7 bothers me at 156. It bothers me. And again, I think maybe this is some people that are thinking, okay, well maybe they'll bounce back a little bit this year. Honestly, I think with NIL and rev share, I think the days of the Vandy loophole that they were able to exploit for many years, and again, nothing wrong with what they did, right? I'm not being critical of Vanderbilt for doing what was allowed under the NCAA with need-based aid, okay, right? I think the loophole should have been closed, but if Vanderbilt had the ability to utilize that and they didn't, they'd be idiots, right? That's just kind of how things are. But I think now that it's kind of a level playing field now, and when you look at the facilities, and it's so funny when you go up there and you hear those people brag about facilities, about baseball, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Have you left Nashville? Have you had too many beers on Broadway Drive? Are you kidding me? There was a joke years ago, former Mississippi State groundskeeper and assistant coach under Paul Gregory, Tom DeArmo, made a comment in the papers that did not sit well with Larry Sitou at Vanderbilt. Made the comment that they didn't have room to put a volleyball court there, so they put a baseball field. I mean, so no, the facilities there on game day are not good at all. But I think this Vanderbilt team is probably going to be similar to what you saw last year. I think that's kind of the expectation now. You know, maybe I'm wrong, but you know, number one, I think, you know, Corbin is kind of at the end, you know, kind of at the end of his career, and he's still a hell of a coach. In no way, Larry Schmidt too. I'm my apologies. I actually met his son last year. But I just think the days of Vandy being able to stack rosters because of the need-based aid is over. That's what I think. Now, if you remember, way back in 2019, we had a great ball team too. Guys, Vanderbilt wins the SEC International Championship. They won 59 games that year. 59. And what's interesting about that particular decade, and we'll start with 2011, they won 54 games in 11, 54 games in 13, 51 games in 14, 51 games in 15, and then 59 games in 19. So from 2011 to 2019, they had five seasons with 50-plus wins. Well, here's what you've had since then. Now, they nearly did it in 21. And, of course, the more games you get to play, the more likely you are to win because you get more opportunities to play, you know, when you get to the postseason and continue playing. But, you know, we beat them for a national title in 21. They had 49 wins that year. We denied them the opportunity to get 50, which would have made their sixth 50-win season or plus in about a decade or so. In 2022, they won 39 games. In 2023, they won 42. And part of that is they win the SEC tournament. So they get hot in Hoover and pick up a couple of extra wins to kind of pad the schedule, and then they get bounced out of a regional. And last year, they win 38 games. And I think what we have seen is just kind of a resettling of the order of things. Now, there's always going to be some kids that just, hey, they want that Vanderbilt degree, and they're going to use college baseball to help pay for it. Of course, it's extremely expensive to go to Vanderbilt. I mean, it is. And that's always been, you know, what people always come back with. Well, yeah, we're supplementing scholarships, but some of it's expensive to be here. The bottom line is you shouldn't be able to do it. But I think NIL has been a game changer for Vanderbilt baseball. And you know, to hear them talk, they would say, oh, no, everything's good. Now, the difference is that now everybody can do, they have the money and the resources to do what Vanderbilt's been able to do for years, and so things have changed. I don't really like this Vanderbilt team, to be honest with you. I think they're a good team, not a great team. We don't play them this year, and if we did, it'd be at Duty Noble Field. But yeah, I think Vanderbilt will be a regional team. I don't know that they're going to host. And so for that reason alone, that's one of the reasons I think Mississippi State, because of the benefit of our schedule, we're going to finish ahead of Vanderbilt. All right, number six, Georgia, with 165 points. Now, you can look at this and say, Steve, they may be a tad overrated. And they may be. But they have the number one portal class in the country in one of the smallest ballparks. It is a launching pad. And they're going to play a ton of games at home. And so, yeah, they're going to win some games. Now, they finished tied for fifth last year with Mississippi State. And, of course, courtesy of the SEC Control Center, they gifted them a win in Starkville. And I don't care what anybody, I don't care whose feelings gets hurt about that. That's the truth. And honestly, I felt bad for Jeff Head. You know, Jeff Head, the lead official that night, has to go out there and communicate decisions that aren't his own. And it changed the outcome of a ball game that I think Mississippi State was going to win. But you know, it is what it is. But yeah, Georgia, really portal reliant, and they went out and chased guys, of course, you know, looking to stack numbers in a smaller ballpark to boost their pro stock. So they're going to hit a bunch of home runs. You might as well be prepared for that. But you got to play a lot of games on the road too. So, you know, that power didn't always travel. All right, number five, and our first team to get a first-place vote in the SEC coaches poll is Florida. I don't agree with that. There's no way I would have voted them number one. I think it's wrong. I do think Florida will be really good this year, and I'm glad we get them here. But 183 points, so they're kind of, you know, they're fifth with some room to move, but not a lot of, you know, there was some distance between them and number four team. And another team that I think is an unfair vote, they get LSU gets a vote to win the SEC. And if you look at the LSU schedule, and maybe we'll do that when we finish this exercise, I think LSU is going to be good. And I think they may have the best 1-2 starters in the country, I mean in the conference. And you didn't hear Chase Shore's name mentioned on preseason All-SEC. Yeah, good chance you're going to hear his name mentioned postseason All-SEC. That guy is really, really good. And he'll be there Friday night, guy, I suspect. But, yeah, I expect LSU to be able to pitch it well, and you need to in that ballpark. But the reality of it is LSU fourth, I could probably get behind that. I just wouldn't have given a first-place vote. Number three, Arkansas. And this, to me, is a little bit of a surprise. You know, I always expect Dave Van Horn's team to be good, so I would probably, even if I didn't know anything about their team, I would probably have them top five in the SEC in the preseason every year because you've got one of the best coaches in the history of college baseball there. And Dave Van Horn just kind of demands a standard of excellence that a lot of people don't. And Dave rubs some people the wrong way at times too, but you can't deny the guy's a hell of a baseball coach. And I don't think there's any question. It's just a matter of time before Arkansas wins it. I just don't think this is the year. And I felt last year they were a very vulnerable team. As you guys remember, if you listen to the show, when we left Fayetteville, Arkansas, we should have won that series, and everybody knows it. And I said then, if we get paired up with them in a super, I will count my lucky stars. Because if we had a second shot at them, we didn't even have Nate Dome or Connor Hyzak available to us, and we went to Fayetteville. I said, you know what? If we get paired up with Arkansas, we're going to go back to Fayetteville and we're going to win that Super Region and go to Omaha. I absolutely believed it, and I still think that would have been the case. However, us nor Arkansas made it to the Super Regional round. How crazy was that? Not a lot of stars on the Arkansas team last year outside of Hagan Smith. I don't know that there's a ton this year, but the thing that I have learned about Arkansas, there's rarely ever any holes in the lineup, right? They're going to go out there and play good defense. They're going to throw strikes. They're always going to pitch it well. Even when they don't have dominant pitching, they always go out there and compete. And so Arkansas gets three votes to win the league, and I don't agree with that. And I probably would have them, you know, top five, but I would not have put them as a first-place voter. But they almost finished second in the voting. Tennessee gets one vote to win it, and that was really, I guess, the kind of difference. If somebody had not voted them to win it, they probably finished third. But Tennessee picked second at 215, one vote. And you know, this Tennessee team, as long as Tony Vitello is there, there's going to be a little bit of Dave Van Horn quality to things. You know, Tony will kind of will them along. And he said, but Steve, I mean, he's just a coach. Well, it's not just that, it's a culture, right? And there's a lot of competition up there. They really didn't do much in the portal last year. But, you know, they've got some arms back, and I suspect as long as Frank is there, they'll always have those arms, you know? So, yeah, to me right now in this era, Tennessee is probably, you know, a top five team in this league until Tony leaves. And I think, you know, when you look around the landscape of college baseball, if he didn't leave last year to go to A&M, which that job kind of folded up quickly, and he didn't go to Texas. And, of course, everybody was like, well, you know, it was kind of a done deal with Sloss Nagel. But that was always the thing that I've always heard is that, you know, it was going to be tough for him to turn down Texas. And that was the big talk. You know, hey, Tony's going to go to Texas or go to Texas A&M. And it didn't work out. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, how long Tony stays there. You know, he might be there his whole career. Number one, though, A&M, which would have been my pick, they get 10 of the 16 votes as a top team. And I think with LaViolette back and Prager, they basically have the entire weekend back. I mean, you lose Braden Montgomery. Think about that. You lose Braden Montgomery and you're picked number one in the SEC polling and the number one preseason team in the country. And so, again, experience matters in college baseball. And so I told you guys I wanted to start from the bottom. And I've kind of been forecasting this for some time since the SEC schedule came out. And granted, the predicted order of finish is just a collective opinion, right? But I think, again, there is enough right now, enough, dare we say, evidence to support that we got a peach of a schedule. And here's why I say that. Mississippi State will play the bottom seven teams in the preseason polling. Yeah, let that sink in for a second. We're going to get 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16. Of the top eight, you're going to play three. You're not going to play any of the top three. You get LSU on the road at Alex Box, a place that we've won the last two series. But it's always tough to go to Alex Box. I don't care how good a team you have or what their expectations are. It is a difficult place to play. So you're going to play LSU on the road. And then you get Florida, the number five team, here. And then you don't play six or seven, and you get Texas here. So you're going to play three of the top eight teams in the preseason polling, and two of those three are going to be at home. And again, the one road trip you got to take is a place where you've had some recent success. I think that's important to understand. So when we talk about the quality of the schedule and the opportunity that lays in front of this team, and we're going to talk a little more about baseball after our top 10 list, but when you look at what's available to you, how many years in a row did we get screwed, you know? And it's like you think, hey, well, you know, we do get Texas. That's right. So that's one of our contemporaries. They're picked eighth. We're picked ninth. We get them at our place. And again, I'm glad we're getting them early. I'm glad we're getting them at home. But you win that series, and then you, maybe you go down to LSU, get a game. Maybe you win it. Things set up really well the rest of the way. Or they should. Now, of course, this time last year, they picked Mississippi State dead last in the West, which was stupid. You know, anybody can make a list. And to be fair, I mean, these coaches don't have a chance to get out and go see what everybody has in the fall or in spring training. I mean, there's no other on-campus scouting, right? So they're just kind of basing on returning players and perhaps some guys they recruited from the portal. Like, I'd be pretty good. It's just a matter of opinion. And it's not always the most educated opinion, even though we look at it and say, well, it's the coach's poll. And that's true. But nobody from Alabama or Vanderbilt or Tennessee showed up at Duty Noble Field to watch a scrimmage. Not allowed. And nor did Chris Simonis, you know, head down to Baton Rouge at Alex Box and take a look at LSU. Everybody's kind of working on word of mouth. But I thought I would go over that with you guys and kind of give you my thoughts because, again, I don't know that we could have asked for anything better than what we got scheduling this year. No question. And so now it's up to Simonis and his team to go out and take full advantage of that. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Yeah, he may be a friend you just hadn't met yet. Yeah, he's that kind of guy. Phone number 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Guys, Blair's got 24 years of experience under his belt when it comes to mortgage loan origination. They don't tell you when you're young, you're going to need a trusted, experienced person that can get their expertise working on your behalf to make your dream of home ownership come true. That's what Blair does. Top 1% close ratio in the country, 3 consecutive years. Licensed to practice in multiple states. He is a bulldog through and through. Rides a wave of emotion just like you and I do. He has a place here in town. He's a season ticket holder in multiple sports. I like to keep business in the family whenever we can. And so nevertheless, I refer you to Blair Chandler. Whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, get his knowledge and expertise working for you. That's Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Now, Blair may need someone to hold his hand through today's top 10 list. It's not a jam band, not a lot of acoustic guitars in this one, but there are a lot of guitars, and Blair is a bit of a delicate flower, and I got a great suggestion. You know, sometimes I tell you guys, send us your suggestions, and occasionally I get one that really kind of strikes my fancy, and today that's the case. Got this over the weekend. Jason, I don't know that he wants credit or not, but we'll give it to him. Jason reaches out to me and says, "Hey, Steve, I'm a huge Metallica fan. I love the fact that other bands have paid tribute to my favorite band. How about a list of your top 10 Metallica covers?" Yeah, so yeah, this absolutely scratches me where I itch. Now, I'll be honest with you, I was a little later on the Metallica bandwagon, and it's ironic that Jason reaches out to us, because the guy that turned me on to Metallica was a guy named Jason Dawsey. And went and hung out with Jason, spent the night at his house, and we watched Cliff 'Em All. And I had never seen it before, and immediately one of my favorite Metallica songs became No Remorse. Loved it from start to finish. We watched everything that they did, and it wasn't too long after that that I went out and bought Kill 'Em All and then Master of Puppets. Master of Puppets, to me, is an absolute masterpiece of American musicianship. If you like that kind of music, you should go check out Master of Puppets. I think it's the best Metallica album. You may disagree, and that's fine. There's a lot of wide-ranging opinions, and one of the things that I'll say, too, kind of like Mississippi State men's basketball, there are some people that are often gatekeepers of Metallica. It's like, hey, we want to kind of keep this to ourselves, you know. You know, we want you to like it, but we don't want you to come to the show. You know, or we do want you to come to the show, but we don't want you to sing along. You know, where were you when we were, you know, supporting an underground band? But Metallica, obviously one of the biggest bands in the world. And it's so interesting. Peyton Plumlee's dad has gone to, like, Donington to watch them play in, like, a castle. I mean, like, he's gone all over the world to see Metallica play. Their fan base are as loyal as they come. And there are people that are ready to fight you over Metallica. It's true. We saw them for the very first time on the And Justice for All tour with Colt in Jackson, Mississippi, day before school started, my senior year. So here we go. Jason, then one, thanks for the suggestion. And shout out to Jason Dawsey. Here are my top 10 Metallica covers. Not songs Metallica covered, but people covering Metallica. Number 10. A band that has kind of come to prominence on Sirius XM Octane here in recent years. They did a great version of Down in a Hole by Alice in Chains. But it's Eye of the Beholder by In Flames. And that Eye of the Beholder is one of those tracks. Like, if you're just a peripheral friend of Metallica, right? If you just, like, you just know the hits. Well, I know Enter Sandman. I know Unforgiven. And I think I know that song, One, you know, where the guy's like in the hospital bed because you grew up in the MTV generation. Eye of the Beholder is a track that you probably need to know. This is one of those tracks, too, that I think it's a deep cut, but it's a fan favorite. I think you'll really enjoy their version of it. And number 9, I like this one a lot, too. And this is one that you know. Everybody knows this track. And that's one of the reasons it's a little lower on my list. And I hate the fact that some people say, oh, you know, Metallica sold out. I like what Jason Newsted said years ago. Yes, we do. We sell out the arena every single night. But this song really kind of brought them to prominence. You know, one was the first ever music video that Metallica ever did. They had to go out and buy the rights to the movie Johnny Got His Gun. And it's so interesting, too. Like, to hear James Hetfield talk about this song kind of in hindsight, you know, he kind of wrote it about his childhood. It's not about a guy that gets killed in war, right? He wrote the lyrics, and then that stuff came later, right? So a lot of that stuff was about him growing up as an abused child. And it changes the whole complexion of the song. And maybe go back and listen to it again, and you can kind of hear some of his personal pain coming through. But shortly after that, they're like, hey, we're not going to do any more videos. And then they did. And then the Black Album came out, became one of the best-selling albums of all time. And the lead single on that album, one of the Metallica classics, everybody knows it. It's Enter Sandman. The version that I went with, and there are multiple versions out there, I went with this one off the Metallica tribute album. I can't remember which album it's on, but you got Burton Bell from Fear Factory as the vocalist. And then John Christ from Danzig as the guitarist. And then, ironically, future Metallica bassist Robert Trujillo is the bass player here. And then Mississippi's own Tommy Aldridge on the drums. I went with that version. I think you'll dig it. It's actually, I don't know if it can get heavier than the original, but there is a quality to this that I think if you love Metallica and you love hearing other people pay tribute to them, I think you'll dig this one. It's true to the original, but there's a little bit of darkness in it that maybe wasn't there before, if that's possible. All right, number eight, another one that I love, and I love this band. We've done a top 10 of them. I saw them play in Tulsa, Oklahoma with Avenged Sevenfold. Thanks, Mark. And it was incredible. But it's Bullet for My Valentine doing Welcome Home Sanitarium. And if you don't know this one, it's one of those ones that if you love Metallica, it just kind of goes without saying, right? It's just one of those songs that, like, when you meet another Metallica fan, you see a guy with a Metallica shirt on, a Master Puppet shirt, you know, right? You're like, we don't even have it, the words can go unspoken. You know, this guy loves his track. All right, number seven. And we have seen this song make a resurgence in popularity here thanks to Stranger Things. And it's so incredible. I remember, like, when that episode came out on Stranger Things, Ani texted me and he goes, Master of Puppets is going to be the number one song on iTunes come Monday. Because kids of a new generation are going to be like, holy smokes, Eddie, you know, ironically, Eddie, the guitar player in Stranger Things, kind of the outcast kid. You know, it's funny, you know, that, you know, Eddie, of course, the mascot of Iron Maiden, you pick that name, makes perfect sense. But I went with Trivium's version of Master of Puppets, and there's some other versions out there. But I love the fact, like, right after that Stranger Things happened, you know, it was crazy. All of a sudden, I began to see all these kids, younger than my own, begin to do these TikTok videos and stuff talking about how incredible the scene was and how they were turned on to Metallica for really the first time. It's like, oh, I never knew. Yeah, it's because your parents listened to much cooler music than you. Yeah, we didn't have all these mumble rappers in our generation. All right, number six. A lot of versions of this one, too. Shakira did a pretty good version of this. A lot of people have covered this one, but I like this one because it is kind of an unexpected pairing. And I love the fact that they took the original track and they kind of made it more their own. And It's Nothing Else Matters, performed by Dave Gahan of Depeche Mode. Yeah, you didn't think you'd see that coming. Dude, it is great. Now, it's different, right? It doesn't have all the guitars and all the matrimony and things like that. But there is kind of an eerie quality to this. Very Depeche-y in that respect. I think you'll dig it. Again, Nothing Else Matters, your number six track, Dave Gahan. Now, we're going to rock the rest of the way. And there's going to be some bands you know. And I guess our number one track's not maybe as rocky as the others. But number five, I didn't really like this band that much because they kind of got into a beef with Avenged Sevenfold about Avenged Sevenfold's self-titled album and said, hey, they're just kind of ripping off everybody else's style. And, like, dude, you guys are You're called Machine Head. You're named after a Bush song. Okay, give it a rest, okay? Take a break somewhere. But they did a great rendition of Battery. And man, that's again, that's another one from the opening chords. You kind of know that the Wild Child's coming out. Battery from Machine Head, number five. Now, number four. Love this one. Legendary performer. Metallica played at his birthday celebration. And so he loved it so much that Lemmy Kilmister decided, hey, we're going to cover a Metallica song. Which one did they go with, kids? Whiplash. And it's perfect. Like, of all the pairings, right, this one makes the most sense. You're like, holy smokes, this is incredible. True to the original, and of course, with, you know, Lemmy out there, you know, grunting out the vocals, but of course, that just thunderous bass line. Incredible, incredible work there. Whiplash from Motorhead, number four. All right, number three, and this is one maybe you don't know. It's actually a live performance, and thankfully, it's on iTunes and Spotify, so we'll be able to get it for you. Way back in 2003, 22 years ago, our friend, David Draiman, and Disturbed, did an incredible rendition of Fade to Black. That's a song that's very controversial. A lot of people didn't like it. There were a lot of people kind of in the religious right that were wanting to ban the record because of Fade to Black, because it's a song about suicide, right? And they're like, hey, you know, kids are so impressionable, they shouldn't be listening to this music. And, you know, we've evolved a lot as a society since then. But we reserve the right to talk and perform and create art about things that make people uncomfortable. The song is not encouraging people to commit suicide. It's just kind of like when Suicide Solution came out by Ozzy. Immediately, nobody even listened to the song. They just said, like, hey, this is wrong. Suicide Solution, what are they telling these kids these days? These devil-worshipping hillbillies, you know. And the song is about alcoholism, right? That's what Suicide Solution's about. So Fade to Black, again, very controversial song. And unfortunately, there were some kids out there that they did kill themselves and wrote in their suicide note that that's the last song they listened to. So people thought, well, maybe there's some kind of demonic influence here. You know, I think we're more evolved creatures than that, but that's just me. All right, number two. And I know many of you were turned on to this band years ago on this show because we love Lizzie Hale. We do. We love her. We've met her. She's great. Seen her perform, I guess, half a dozen times now, and every time it's wonderful. And, you know, she did some dates with Skid Row last year and was offered the opportunity to join Skid Row, but, you know, she did not going to do that, you know, not with Hailstorm being as successful as they are. But she did say, hey, I haven't ruled anything out about working with Skid Row in the future. I think one of the best things that could happen is Skid Row goes back in the studio and has Lizzie do a couple tracks. I think it'd be amazing. If you can find the live footage of Lizzie Hale and Skid Row, have her singing I Remember You or 18 in Life, it'll blow you away. She is an incredible vocalist. And one of these people, too, that I think maybe even with her notoriety, she is still underappreciated. That's Lizzie Hale of Hailstorm. We're going to go with Ride the Lightning from Hailstorm. You thought maybe, oh, well, it'll be, you know, it's Lizzie Hale, so maybe they're going to do something else. You know, no, no. Not Lizzie. She's a true rocker, man. Love her to death. But number one, I love this. And the reason it's number one is because of the innovation and ingenuity that was used to bring this thing to light. It's Chris Cornell. And if you've listened to the storybook, the great Chris Cornell catalog, what he does here is he takes one from U2 and he plays one from U2. And then sings the lyrics to one from Metallica. It completely changes the dynamic of the song. And it's like you're sitting there and you're like, how does this work so well? Well, it does. It's an incredible mashup from one of the incredible singer-songwriters of my lifetime. So it's one from Chris Cornell. And I think you will absolutely love that. Even if you're a hard, heavy banger, heavy metal, if I can get all this out, you know, defender of the faith, I think you can appreciate the sensibilities and sensitivity of the Chris Cornell cover of this. But it works so incredibly well. You don't think it will, but it does. And you can hear the crowd as he begins to play one from U2, and they think they know it. And then halfway through the first verse, he realized, wait a minute, that's one from Metallica. How did this happen? Absolutely incredible. That's why it's number one. Jason, again, thank you so much for the suggestion. So glad we could put a list together. I hope we made you happy. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, on X at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67, and you can find our great list on Spotify under the same handle. You can find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. And if you're not already following me, what are you doing with your life? Well, there's no point living life that way. Come be with us. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, I love Campus Bookmart, and chances are you do too. And if you don't, it's because you just hadn't shopped there yet. They're going to have the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in the galaxy. A lot of people make that claim, and like a lot of other people that advertise their services and that kind of stuff, it's just hot air, man. You know, the evidence is there to support Campus Bookmart. Miss Kathy Brown does an amazing job. I'll be signing books there next weekend, too, ahead of some baseball activity as we open the baseball season. We'll get you times, but we'll do it Friday and Saturday before the game. And so we'd love for you to come by and say hello. We look forward to being with you. But if you're looking for Mississippi State merch, whether it's a way to detail out your fan cave, decorate the home, or just update your wardrobe, you can find everything you need at Campus Bookmart. Now, if you can't make it to town, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. And what's that, Steve? BSR. And that stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. Gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. Campus Bookmart. Be sure to check them out next time you're in Starkville. All right, Mississippi State women's basketball. Sam Purcell met with the media earlier today. You can watch his press conference in its entirety over at jeanspage.com for free. We also have the Know the Foe feature coming up as State gets ready to play the Arkansas women. That game's going to be Thursday night, 6:30 tip here at Humphrey Coliseum. We encourage you to come out and be a part of that. I know it has been a difficult stretch for us, but there is still plenty of basketball left and opportunities for us to make a move upwards in the SEC standings. We still hope to finish in the top half of this league, and that's all got to kind of get started on Thursday. And so if you're on the fence about coming, let me encourage you, let you know the Bulldogs need you here. Now, we get a good matchup. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about today. You know, Arkansas has really struggled this year. 9-15 overall and 2-7 in the league. Away from Bud Walton Arena, they are 2-8. 2-4 in true road games. 0-4 on a neutral court. Maybe we should move it to South Haven. But I think we'll get these guys taken care of, or these ladies, pardon me. They open up the season. And I mean, just right out of the gate, right? And they get beat by Fairfield and Bud Walton by 14. Fairfield. Are you big Fairfield fans? You remember them like they were kind of riding the RPI in baseball a few years ago? You know, remember that? I mean, that's probably the first time many of you even knew that there was a Fairfield, right? They were like the RPI killer for everybody. It was just crazy how well they were. And, of course, they couldn't host because they didn't have the facilities to host. But yeah, you probably didn't know a lot about the Stags. And now here we are. We're going to bring them in and we're going to play them. Arkansas was thinking, that's, oh, we'll just bring them in here and we'll just kind of handle things. And I don't want to go too deep down the road here, but the Fairfield Stags, looking back in hindsight, maybe it wasn't as bad a loss as we expected. Guys, they're 17-3 on the year and 11-0 in their conference. And they went in and ambushed the Razorbacks. And, of course, an SEC team should never lose to Fairfield. But you look back at that and you're like, holy smokes, we lost to Fairfield. Then you look up now, they're going to probably win their conference easily. They bounce back and beat East Texas A&M. They win on the road in Little Rock against the Trojans. And the game had to go to overtime. I mean, so again, you think, hey, three games into this thing, we've lost to Fairfield. We win a game, and then we have to go to overtime. Fortunately, they win 71-60. Then they blast UT Arlington. Okay, things are going good. All right, we're going to make the big trip out to Pauley Pavilion, take on the Bruins, the number five UCLA Bruins. And UCLA treated Arkansas like they were the Louisiana school for the deaf. 101-52. They absolutely destroyed them. Absolutely beat them to death. And it's, if you're UCLA, it's like, we got an SEC team coming in here. We got to lay the hammer down. And they did. Oral Roberts goes into Bud Walton Arena and beats the Razorbacks by 21 points. They bounce back, get Arkansas State. They lose by 26, by 14, if I can do the math here, in the Daytona Beach Classic to Oklahoma State, and then bounce back and lose by one to Bowling Green. Pretty crazy stuff. In the SEC-ACC Challenge, they do beat Boston College, which may be their best win of the year. They get by SEMO, they lose to Texas Tech at home, and then they lose to Liberty in Cherokee, North Carolina, as part of the Cherokee invite, 75-61. They lose to Troy, 77-69 in that same event. They go home and get Central Arkansas, 87-70, and then we get an SEC play. LSU routes them, Texas routes them. They go to Auburn and win a barn burner of a game, 59-58 over Auburn. Really the only thing you can feel good about in conference play for the most part. Tennessee gets them 93-63 by 30. They get beat at home by 28. What is it? No, it's 32. Pardon me. I can't count today. By Alabama. They go to Vanderbilt and get beat by 41 points. Things are not good. They go to Kentucky, lose by 20, and then miraculously, they pull out an upset of A&M. And there was no fluke about this thing either. They get them 72-51. Like, if I told you they won 52-51, you're like, man, that's crazy. They won substantially. Every dog has their day. And then they play Florida on Monday and get beat by 30. And so this is a team that is prime for a Mississippi State win. Let's kind of dig inside the numbers a little bit here, too. As we often do, you know, Mike Neighbors, you know, it's like, is it working? No. You know, and that's, again, too, you look at the trajectory of this program in recent years. You know, in 2021, they went 9-6 in the conference. And ever since then, it's kind of been diminishing returns. In 22, they go 18-14 overall, 7-9 in the league. They bounce back with the overall record in 23, 24-13, but again, 7-9 in the conference. And last year, they finished 18-15 and 6-10 in the league. Now they're 9-15 and 2-7 in the league. And you kind of begin to wonder, is the Mike Neighbors era coming to an end here in a couple months? You might want to call your real estate agent. Maybe that's just me, but when you don't win, you don't get to stay. That's kind of how things work, you know. It kind of is what it is, right? But Izzy Higginbotham, doing a good job for them, averaging 24.3 points a game. And it's kind of been a one-woman show. Nakiki Smith's got 10.5 points. Those are the only two scorers that average in double figures. Carly Keats right there at 8. But there's not a lot to feel good about on this team. And if you're Izzy Higginbotham, you begin to kind of ask yourself, you know what, how did I end up here? I mean, your Walmart's great and everything, but man, it's not good at all. They will shoot the three-point basket. They got 582 attempts on the year. And the most prolific shooter is Carly Keats. She's got 123 three-point attempts. Kiki Smith with 117. Jenna Lawrence at 113. But as a team, shooting 31% from beyond the arc. And from the field, it's not great. It's not great, but 40%. They're just a team that just can't seem to get out of their way. They turn the basketball over a lot. Opponents, 197 steals on the year. Arkansas has only stolen 122 times. They're actually getting outscored. I think it's the first opponent in the conference that we've talked about. Their opponents are averaging 77.6 points per game. Arkansas is averaging 70. And remember, there were some games early on where they kind of were able to stretch their legs a little bit and kind of skew the numbers. But this is a game not only should we expect to win, but we have to win. Absolutely have to win. And one of the things that's been interesting to see, that they're getting killed in first quarters. Teams are coming out, punching them in the face. So you're playing from behind, which kind of explains why you have so many three-point attempts. In addition to that, they're getting killed in third quarters. But the greatest variance of points is in the first quarter. Opponents are 513 points in the first quarter to Arkansas's 368. So almost 150-point differential. So State needs to get out to the fast start. Second quarters have kind of been even, and then after the halftime adjustments, their opponents have kind of put some distance between them too. Arkansas, 11 points in overtime, and of course that was in that Little Rock game. They outscored them 11-0 in overtime. It's very interesting to see how this all kind of shakes loose here. But yes, it's a game we got to have. Rebounding has not been great for them. They miss a lot of shots in women's basketball, so you got to make sure that you're good at that. But 166 rebounds for Vera Ajinu. We'll go with that. Do our best. And then Jenna Lawrence with 135. You know, but and that's the thing that we talk about so much, about how the post presence matters so much in women's basketball. And they just simply have not been able to do a whole lot with that. You know, we could belabor the point here and talk about all this, but the reality of it is this is a team that Mississippi State simply has to beat. If you lose this game, a lot of conversations begin to kind of happen about women's basketball, you know, about the trajectory of this season and perhaps the program. I mean, you know, we have to win this game. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And it's interesting kind of looking at, you know, kind of what they've done in conference play. Izzy Higginbotham hadn't slowed down, but many others have. You know, it's just, you know, the quality of competition begins to kind of heat up. But, you know, Higginbotham's a volume shooter, averaging 18 attempts a game. But outside of that, there's just not a lot to feel good about if you're an Arkansas Razorback. You're probably really looking forward to baseball season. Of course, Arkansas men got a big win over Kentucky the other night, kind of the revenge of John Calipari. But, yeah, we got to find a way to get this thing done. And I still think there is an opportunity for us to find our way into the tournament. And I know many of you are thinking, Steve, I'm just kind of checked out. I just wish that you wouldn't be. I think it's one of those things that we begin to think about, you know, what's left. You know, we've gone through a very, very difficult stretch. And you look up, we're 3-6, but goodness, man, there's so many teams behind us. We still have an opportunity because there are some of our contemporaries, you know, kind of right ahead of us that we have an opportunity to catch. And of course, South Carolina undefeated in conference, 9-0, LSU 8-1, Texas 8-1. That's going to be a tough night for us. Kentucky, we worried about that game early on, but they're 8-1 in the conference. I mean, tied for second in the league, just a game behind South Carolina. Ole Miss at 6-3, Alabama 5-4, and we'll play them. Vanderbilt 5-4, Tennessee 4-5, Oklahoma 4-5. How far have they fallen? You know, since they were a top 10 team, Mississippi State beat them. And then we're 3-6, Florida's 3-6, A&M's 3-6, Auburn's 2-7, Arkansas 2-7, Missouri 1-8. Of course, that wins over us, and then 1-8 for Georgia. So we've got to make hay while the sun is shining. So I encourage you to come out to Humphrey Coliseum. And again, I say I'm still on the Sam Purcell bandwagon. I know many of you, with every loss, you're just like, you know, I think you got to be fair to this team and fair to this staff. Outside of the Missouri loss, there really hasn't been a game that we've lost that we expected to win, at least where I sit. Maybe you see things differently. The Missouri loss still sticks in the craw. But it's not like we're showing up and not playing well and getting blown out in games and there's not buy-in with the team. There is still so much more to play for. And so I encourage you, stick with the team, stick with the coaching staff, and certainly Ja'Kayla Jordan has been one of the better players that we've had in recent memory. She certainly needs your support. She is a Bulldog superstar through and through. And so we look forward to seeing you all out at Humphrey Coliseum Thursday evening. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And, man, I tell you this, you need to go ahead and book your trip. Yeah, spend a couple nights at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Bring a large group together, whether it be family, friends, whatever you want to do. You want to come to a Mississippi State ball game weekend. You want to come midweek and maybe take in a doubleheader, watch the men play on Tuesday and the women play on Wednesday. Whatever you want to do, use some of your vacation time and do something meaningful. Get everybody together. You know what I'm saying? We don't get together enough. We say it all the time, and then we just kind of rest on our laurels waiting for somebody else to take the leadership role in the planning process. That needs to be you. Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page comes up. You can peruse all the amenities available to you and your guests. It's out past the Highlands. It's well off the road. A lot of peace and quiet out there. Not that we want you throwing a rager or anything, but yeah, it's a great place, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your dining and entertaining right there. Do your tailgating there. Go to the ball game, come back. You know, it's great. It's super. And maybe you got a work group coming to Starkville, so instead of going out renting six hotel rooms, why not just rent the Stark Vegas Clubhouse for a few nights, and everybody can stay under one roof. You got some common areas to work, and then some private areas everybody can kind of retreat to and just, you know, enjoy some time that's more comfortable than staying in a hotel room. Because you know how it is when you stay in a hotel room. It gets it's crazy, man, trying to recreate and relax. Hotel rooms aren't really built for that, you know? And so check it out today. And after you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, you're going to see some booking options that pop up. You can book through Airbnb or VRBO. That's your choice. But if you want to save some money, and I encourage that you do, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's BSR, the number 10, to get 10% off your stay. Just by listening to this show, you're saving money at Mississippi State's and Starkville, the Golden Triangle's premium venue for large groups. I can smell the cinnamon rolls right now, right? That full-service kitchen, the back porch area, the fire pit, everything is so great. Everything you need is right there, even a wet bar. Yeah, have a great time at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, last night we had the baseball scrimmage under the lights at Duty Noble. And one of the reasons that we did it last night, just to get some work at night, right? Get some work in the venue at night, do some outfield work. It's a little difficult picking up that ball sometimes right at dusk, you know, but we were a little bit darker getting started. But you want to replicate game day type scenarios in practice so you can kind of begin to adjust. And I thought it was a great, great night. And pitching kind of ruled supreme last night. Your pitching is kind of ahead of hitting this time of year, but there have been some scrimmages where the offense has kind of ruled the day. I spoke to Chris Simonis this morning. And one thing that I told him, I said, I think we kind of needed a scrimmage like that. We kind of needed a scrimmage. And I believe it was the black team didn't get a hit until maybe the sixth inning. It was a perfect game until that point. It was ridiculous. The opening salvo came in the first inning as Ace Reese with an Oppo Taco two-run shot the other way. And you're going to have a lot of fun watching Ace. Just telling you. I love this kid, man. And he was one of those big portal wins. And I think some of our fans are like, well, I mean, you know, Stevie, you know, he didn't play at LSU. He played at Houston. Yeah, kid from Canton, Texas, went to Houston. He is your most explosive offensive player right now. And that's saying a lot. I mean, it truly is. That's saying a lot. Hunter Hines has picked all SEC. Ace Reese is not. Nobody even knows who he is. But I can promise you, come April, everybody in this league is going to know who he is. And they're going to be circling that name on the scouting report and said, hey, we cannot let this guy beat us. He is absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely. And I mean, you say, Steve, you're hyping this guy up so much. I am. I think he has 8 bombs now. Between the fall and the spring, you know. And so, and it doesn't matter who we trot out there. This guy can mash. Going to be your everyday third baseman. You know, we'll be a little bit creative at times with that. We may make some defensive adjustments late and things of that nature. But Ace is a big-time dude. And, you know, a little bit later, you kind of work some things out. Gavin Black did not have a good outing last night. Now, his last two outings have been incredible. A lot of fastballs. A lot of swing and miss. But last night, for some reason, he just couldn't find it. And that's, there are going to be days like that for everybody, right? But, you know, the story to me of the night last night, the best pitching performance in a night full of great pitching performances was Nate Williams. And I got home last night, I told Mike, I got to write about this. Nate Williams is a guy that we have not expected much from. And to kind of give you some backstory, you know, Nate was a guy, when we won that recruiting battle, it was huge. It was absolutely crazy. When we got him, we're thinking, man, this guy's going to come in here. Is he a starter? Is he a closer? I mean, he's a big physical guy, 6'4", 250. Played at North Cobb High School, you know, right there in baseball crazy central. You know, it's true. But it went the junior college route at Florence Darlington Tech. And so in 21, he was the Region 10 Pitcher of the Year. Went 8-3 on the year, also had a save, led a team in wins, had a complete game, struck out 80. It's crazy. Only allowed 20 walks, a 4-1 ratio his first year on the junior college level. And yes, I understand it's JUCO. The next year, he comes back out again, makes 11 starts, 84 Ks to 28 walks. And so we thought, hey, we'll get this guy in. We'll get him in good shape. We'll refine the delivery a little bit, and this guy will be able to help us. As soon as he gets on campus, we find out that he's hurt. Tommy John, baby. It's almost a rite of passage now, you know, for hard throwers. So he misses the entire 2023 season. And we kept thinking, okay, this guy was expected to be, you know, our closer. We had to kind of work around that. And people forget, you know, I mean, you're missing him. You're missing Stone Simmons, you know. Yeah, it was tough. And then last year we're thinking, okay, he'll round back into form. And he just wasn't throwing strikes. And some of these guys, you know, like we talked about Pico the other day, you know, Pico's situation was much different. You know, Pico didn't have the actual tear, you know, but they knew it was a ticking time bomb, just a matter of time. So they went ahead and did the surgery, which allowed the recovery time to be shorter. And you saw last year, Pico was not at his best, even when he came back. By the end of the year, he was doing really well. But Pico is the exception rather than the rule. Most everybody needs a full year. Nate needed almost two. So he misses all of last year. So he has not thrown in a really competitive game for 2 years. Came out in the fall, did some decent things. But what he did last night will make you think a little bit about Landon Sims. Now, I'm not going to sit here and compare the two and say he's going to be at that level. I don't expect that. But we have not had a true bona fide closer. You know, a guy that can just kind of show up out there and just shove, and like 10 pitches later, the game is over. We haven't had that in a while. And Nate Williams is a guy, we talked about him recently on the show. I just don't know what to expect. We saw him last night, and I got a tip on Saturday that I won't use the language that was used. But they said, Nate Williams is throwing the dog stuffing out of the baseball right now. He gets out there last night, and guys, he is spotting up 96. He's able to elevate. He throws the 2, the 4. And he has a hammer curve, and he can throw that thing for a strike, or he can throw it for a swing and miss. And I was so incredibly impressed. And in addition to that, I started thinking, this is another piece for us on the back end, right? You already know what you have with Chase Hungate. You feel like you know what you got with Gavin Black. But if you had a sure enough one-inning guy, high-leverage guy to go out there and just throw smoke, and you have to in this league, right? You've got to have a guy that can go out there and just pepper the zone with elite stuff. Nate Williams has elite stuff. And he's been a little bit slow there, being careful with him, right? Make sure he's in full health. He's back. And all of a sudden, there's just rampant enthusiasm now. And granted, it's one outing, right? True, it's one outing. But you start thinking, it gives you another option on the back end. And how many times last year did we have to roll Brooks Auger out there twice in a week? Roll Tyler Davis out there sometimes 2 and 3 times in a week? Well, now you don't have to do that. And now you start thinking about the depth of this bullpen. As we discussed the other day, this is not going to be a starting rotation that's going to work deep into ballgames. On occasion, that'll happen, right? You know, Pico's a guy that I think maybe can consistently give you 6 and on a good day give you 7. You know, Carson Ligon's a guy probably closer to 5, but, again, he's more of a high-leverage intensity type pitcher, you know. We'll see. You know, and I think Carson Ligon's still a bit of a question mark. You know, he did not have a great outing on Friday. Last week, I'm looking forward to see what they do this week. Our final scrimmages of the preseason this weekend. we encourage you to come out and be a part of that. And Fan Day is on Saturday. It's going to be, I guess, what, 3:30 to 5:30? Doors open at 3, I think, or maybe it's 3 to 5. But anyway, you can find the details over at healthstate.com. So Fan Day, you need to come out for that and then take in the scrimmage. And I remember thinking last year, and maybe it was the homer in me or the Mississippi State guy in me just saying like, hey, you know, we can't have three straight years of bad baseball. You just can't. And this league is so unforgiving. Once you get down at the bottom, like nobody's gonna feel sorry for you. And it's tough to go get portal guys then, right? And then you end up kind of getting portal guys that nobody else in the league wants unless you overpay for them, as we've seen around this league here as of late, just to try to dig yourself out of the hole. But I remember last year thinking, Kendall Rogers messaged me and said, I can't get a good read on the Bulldogs. What do you think? I said, Kendall, I think State will be a strong number two on the road this year in the regional. This year, I feel pretty confident State's going to host. And you're like, but Steve, the league coaches voted us ninth. Yeah, last year they voted you 13 out of 14. And it's just because there's so many unknowns about this team. And then all of a sudden, just when you think you've got a good idea of how this thing's going to break out, all of a sudden Nate Williams comes out there and shoves like we haven't had a closer shove in a long time. You know, Tyler Davis is a guy that got outs last year. But, you know, TD was not a guy that was going to go out there and overpower people. I'm not going to name the hitters because I don't want to embarrass them. Man, there were so many awkward swings last night. It was crazy. One particular time he comes out there and he's 96 above the hands and gets a swing and miss, comes back, peppers the corner, and then throws that hammer curve for a strike and just walks off the mound before the call is made. Ridiculous. And again, it's just one outing, but it shows the potential that he has. Which excites me even more about Mississippi State baseball. Because how many games last year did we blow leads in the ninth inning? I mean, you go back and you think about that wild game at Ole Miss. I mean, we blow, what, three leads late? And you just needed somebody to go out there and get you three outs. Well, now all of a sudden, there's another guy emerging. And Hungate's a guy that's going to eat up a ton of innings. And he's a guy that could probably close the ball game for you too. But when I began to look at the pieces of this thing, I didn't even factor Nate Williams into it. I thought, well, maybe Nate will just, you know, maybe he'll be a guy that will throw midweek. You know, I just don't know. And some guys never fully recover from Tommy John. Despite the advancements that we've made in the medical community, there are some guys that are just never quite the same. And I thought, well, you know what, maybe that'll be Nate. And you hate it. And you go out there to a abbreviated scrimmage on Tuesday night under the lights at Duty Noble Field, and you watch that guy put the lights out. So if he can replicate that a few times for us this year, it could be the difference between hosting and not. That's how significant it is. You know, we could do the math on it, you know, and look at how many games that we blew last year late. And a lot of it, not just because we just didn't have enough depth. And as a result, you had to throw guys more often than you should just to try to win a ball game. And I've had this discussion many times with you all and with guys connected to Mississippi State baseball. We did not lose the Florida series because of the walk-off Friday night and the walk-off Sunday. And I know technically that's correct. But we lost that series because we had to go extra innings and throw premium arms against Samford to win a game because we just could not absorb another bad midweek loss. And then we go down there, and maybe you've forgotten that Friday night, you know, we felt like, hey, we're in great shape here. You know, we've done some big things. And we're going to go down here and take this Friday game. And, of course, we absolutely destroyed them on Saturday. But the Sunday game, of course, and poor Evan Sieri, who looked really good over the weekend through one inning. And it was a 1-2-3 inning. And, man, he had a kind of a skip in his step as he walked off the mound. And how big is that, too? I mean, just starting having all the horses pulling in the same direction, it starts – you start getting a little, pardon the phrase, you start getting a little woolly about this baseball team when you start thinking about, you know what, hey, as we're getting ready to go play a baseball game a week from tomorrow, you know, instead of us having to kind of worry about what things are happening, it's like now all of a sudden, it's almost like adding free agents right before the season. But I go back to this this Florida Friday night game, and maybe you've forgotten. Guys, we were up 6-2. In this game after 7. The game's not over, but that's how you feel. right? You start, you know, Florida's kind of throwing guys that are down the bullpen a little bit. They don't want to waste arms on a Friday night game that, you know, perhaps are going to lose. And because, you know, that's what happens. You know, so you can lose Sunday's game on Friday. Like if you go all in to win Friday and then and you don't get it and you spend all your premium arms, if you bring them back on Saturday or even Sunday, I mean, you're kind of done. You know, I mean, that's just kind of how it is. And so we get to the eighth inning in this game. We pull Kemp Schulke and bring in Tyler Davis. And he didn't have it. And what does he do? He walks the first two hitters he sees, throws one strike to two hitters. Four balls and then a 3-1 count ends up being a ball. We didn't get a foul ball. So automatically, in this ball game, we have started a rally ourselves. And the reason TD wasn't quite there is because TD had to go extended innings against Samford. And you turn right back around and have to put him out there. And so we bring in Auger, and you know, they get a couple runs on us. You know, it's like both of those guys that walk end up scoring. You know, we kind of carved Caglione up most of the weekend. And we get him basically, you know, to ground out here. You got runners at first and second. You, of course, are going to let the big guy swing. And he just hits a little number over there to first base, and we throw it to Auger, who covers. So it works like a bunt. And then there's a ground ball, run scores, and there's a double down the line, run scores. Now all of a sudden the game's gotten a little bit tighter. And again, it's like, you know, hey, you know, we needed to put on some runs here. But the reality of it is when you're up on, you're up significantly on the road in the Southeastern Conference in the final two innings, you've got to have dudes to close out games. Simple as that. And so we get in the ninth here, at top of the ninth, and there's a single. And there's a walk. So back-to-back innings, you get the first two hitters on, three of them courtesy of a walk. And then you get Auger gets Robertson to swing. So now we have the out, bring in Nolan Stevens. We get a K-swing, and you think, okay, we're good. We're going to get this thing. Give up the single, run scores. And Caglione singles down the third baseline. That loads the bases. And then we walk it in. And of course, I remember that's that little cue ball that rolls out there to third. And Kohler just couldn't get a glove on it, you know. And pretty crazy stuff. But again, you know, that trip down memory lane is to kind of make a point here, is that we're in a position now, provided everybody stays healthy and works hard, that we should not ever have to use premium arms in the midweek for more than an inning or so. Simple as that. And I think what you know, you'd love to have the freshman, you know, just kind of take the ball and run with it midweek. You would. I think you use some of that, you know, bullpen type stuff, right? I mean, you basically go out there and throw a bullpen just to get some guys some work, you know, just to keep everybody fresh on the weekend. And you start thinking about that. If you can pull off the Johnny Holstaff approach, then everybody's available on the weekend. But the most important thing is that we have got to have guys on the back end that are going to be fresh for the weekend. Now, ideally, what you'd like to see is you win these games in the midweek without any drama, so you don't have a lot of high-leverage innings that you need your bullpen. Now, of course, when you think about younger guys like Ryan McPherson, who was absolutely phenomenal last night, probably the best inning outside of Nate Williams last night. Phenomenal. And so now I start thinking, hey, is McPherson a future closer for us, or is he a future starter? But if he's a guy that maybe you're going to groom into being a starter next year, you know, maybe you give him a little bit of a, you know, little rope and experience in the midweek. But I think Nate Williams just changes so much if you can get him to be who you envisioned him to be. That's so incredibly important. And again, that's a guy, and I wrote it last night. I said, this is a guy that may end up being a crucial piece for us that many people had forgotten about. You talk about a comeback kid, a guy that hadn't thrown in 2 years. And you start thinking, hey, if he can give us, you know, six or seven successful ninth innings this year, that could be the difference between a lot of things. You know, just being able to close out games. You know, how many times did you see it last year? All of a sudden, you know, you think about, you know, the Arkansas game. Even the Vanderbilt game we came back to win on Sunday. You know, it's like, hey, how many times, as good as we pitched last year – did we just not have the stopper at the end of a ball game? You know, how many times did you see it when Landon Sims was here, right? In 21? When you heard Whitesnake play, the game was over. And I wrote it exactly that way in Dogpile. I remember I wrote this. When Whitesnake played, the game was over, but Auburn just didn't know it yet. You know, and that's how I feel about this particular moment in time, too. If you have the ability to have somebody to go out there and just, you know, throw once or twice a week and get those last three outs, which are often the most difficult outs to get in an entire ball game, it changes the complexion of your team. And so I don't want to oversell Nate Williams just after the one. He had a couple of good outings in the fall, but not what we saw yesterday. And there's just something about his delivery that's a little bit different. You know, and that hammer curve, it tunnels out of the fastball arm slot with the same speed. So you're getting some very awkward swings. That's the kind of stuff as a baseball guy that excites me. You know, how many times the last couple of years, and we knew it last year, like, Steve, who's going to be the closer? I mean, you know, I guess we're going to piece it together. Because, at this point last year, we didn't know if we could we trust Tyler Davis? We didn't know. You know, many people were hoping Tyson Harden would go in the portal. You know, we didn't know what Tyson Harden was going to be this time last year. But now, all of a sudden, this year, you feel like you've kind of got a better idea of how we'll kind of pitch this thing in the later innings. And you've got a lot more options to work with. And guys like Hungate, of course, are proven commodities. You know, of course, Gavin Black down the stretch last year was really good. You know, there's some times early on, a guy that came up from junior college, you know, there was some variance at times with his performance. But when you start thinking about pairing up Nate Williams and Gavin Black and Chase Hungate, and you think, hey, I just need a couple of these guys to step up and be stoppers for me late in ball games. You know, Chase Hungate, a guy that's pitching Omaha, you know. And so the pieces are there, where last year I think it was just a work in progress the whole way through, and you needed somebody to step up and prove they could do it in high leverage situations. And then TD kind of became that guy for us, and at times Tyson Harden was. But it was a surprise. And let's just kind of call it for what it is. You know, we all saw it exactly unfold, and then you're pleasantly surprised. But I think right now you can have a lot of confidence in this bullpen. And that's probably the first time since 2021 that we've been able to say that. That, hey, we have confidence in these arms, and there's some arms that you don't even know yet. You know, and again, just kind of looking back at last year, very quickly, Tyler Davis goes 6-1 last year with a 2.80 ERA, 28 appearances on the year, and had 5 saves. You know, so he was directly involved with 11 wins for us last year. Directly. And of course, there's some other games, you know, he pitched kind of along the way. You look at Tyson Harden, a 3.22 ERA. He goes 3-3 in a couple of those games. Like when we go to Arkansas, you know, we had to throw him more times than we wanted to. But he also had a couple of saves. So he's a guy, too, instrumental on the back end. But outside of that, there really wasn't a whole lot, right? We thought Brooks Auger was going to be the closer. And Brooks, of course, puts together a masterpiece performance as a starter against Ole Miss and Hoover that really kind of changed so much for us. But it gets a no decision in that game, which is kind of crazy. But the reality of it is, it's a game we had to have. And you start looking at some of these numbers in hindsight, and you think it just really illustrates the job that Justin Parker did. You know, with some guys that were kind of scratching dent, right? You know, Cam Schulke, of course, a guy that came in, and Cam had some big moments for us, and some other times too, maybe not so much. But, you know, the point that I kind of make here is you got four guys that got saves last year. And so this by-committee approach is not a novel concept. I just think that the bullets you're putting in the gun this year are going to be a little more potent. How about that? All right, if you hadn't done so, go to DirtyNibbleBook.com, and you can order all my sports titles, get a signed copy of whatever I've written, and including When the Bottom Falls. And we're running a special at True West Floats by Starkville. You can get 2 floats for $99. Now, it doesn't have to be a date night deal, right? You can buy this, and then your wife or your husband or your significant other, or whatever you call them, your playmate, whatever, they can use them both, right? You're not obligated to come. You just spend $99, you get 2 floats, right? But it's also a great date night idea. Get all your questions answered. It's 662-268-7601. My lovely wife, Dana, can take care of that. Many of you are thinking, I want a unique Valentine's Day gift. I don't just want to order the same old thing. Well, this is your solution. It's a very unique experience. If you haven't experienced it, you should. If you're a person that suffers with chronic pain or anxiety, we may be able to help you. But sometimes you just need a break. Maybe you don't have any of those ailments and say, Steve, I just need to relax a little bit. We can help you with that. And then after your float, you have the opportunity to use the oxygen bar for free if you're a member or a first-time floater. And that kind of rejuvenates you, and it's pretty amazing in that respect. And then right now, we're running 60% off annual subscription to Gene's Page for just 48 hours. So you have today, Wednesday the 5th, or Thursday the 6th, take advantage of that. That deal will end Thursday night. We're kind of celebrating National Signing Day, even though we're not technically signing anybody. So 60% off today and tomorrow. That's off the annual subscription price. So a great deal. Just kind of jump aboard that. We're happy to provide that to you. Probably won't see another sale for a few months. You know, so now's a good time to get on board, because that's going to take you through baseball season, the summer camps, March Madness, fall camp, football season, portal season, National Signing Day, and all the way back to here, right? So you think about all the things. And guys, we're doing over 300 stories a month. Nobody's ever done that in the history of Mississippi State coverage. And so you're getting more. And about half of those stories are VIP. So we put a lot of free content out there. But if you want the full story, you need to be a member at jeanspage.com. Hey, you guys have a great rest of your week. We'll be back on Friday. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations, because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.